Preparing this was probably one of the most difficult messages I've ever done because primarily it's something that we just really don't know much about. Like Shane said, and everything he said I was going to say. So it's hard to describe to somebody because people are just like, well, I have spiritual direction. I'm not sure what you mean. Is it like a priest? Is it like confession? And yes and no and maybe and kind of, but not really, if that helps at all. So I'm going to try to broad brush a lot of this and give some background, but hopefully not get lost in the detail at any point. And the third thing that I want to mention is this, and I can stand before you with a clear conscience on this. I did not make up any of these people's names. Okay, so just know that as we go through this. And if you are thinking about getting a dog anytime soon, keep your eye on the screen. Some might come up that you want to consider. So, spiritual direction is something that really in the Western church, we just don't know that much about. But the interesting thing is, this has been going on from generation to generation to generation from about the 4th century on, primarily in the Eastern church. The closest thing we probably understand in the West is what we call apostolic succession. And most of us go, oh yeah, that's what the Catholics think. And Jesus was the first guy, and then there were 12 disciples, and somehow Peter got ahead of the rest of the pack, and he became the one, and it's just been handed down and handed down and handed down. And it involves bishops and praying over the next bishop and praying over the next bishop, and hopefully somewhere in there, we keep the same teaching and the same understanding and the same doctrine and all that kind of thing. And as Callistos Ware would say, it's probably a little more hierarchical than spiritual, but many people consider it necessary. Well, then there's a second line that goes throughout history that is not so much situated around bishops or particular cities or dioceses or all those kind of things, but it actually rests on spiritual makeup and character. And it was literally passed from person to person. And in the 11th century, a guy named Simeon the New Theologian called it the golden chain. And it's this chain that has gone through history of me taking you and pouring myself out into your life and then you doing the same to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. And just to show you kind of how broad this is, the two guys on the left there are kind of like the superstars of spiritual direction from the 6th century in Gaza in Israel. Barsanuphius and John. You can pick up their greatest hits on iTunes. No. But these guys are so relevant, their letters are still being published and reprinted today. Small volumes, huge volumes, critical volumes, but they wrote massive amounts of material on spiritual direction, on what it meant to live the spiritual life in Gaza. Then the group of guys on the other side are the elders of Optina. They're from Russia, 19th century. They are the big hitters. Dostoevsky, Tolstoy, Maxim Gorky, the czars. They all used to go to these guys at the monastery of Optina for spiritual direction. And Dostoevsky's novel, The Brothers Karamazov, he even created a character to pay tribute to the elders of Optina and their spiritual direction and the life that they had brought to so many people in Russia at that time. So you've got two groups of guys here almost 1,300 years apart, yet their message, their method, and the way they perceive the passing on a spiritual life is virtually identical. One other thing I want to comment, just to make sure everybody doesn't think I'm doing the sexist thing. This has happened with both men and women, but because so much of the writings are from the early centuries of the church, it's usually just spiritual fathers. So if I use the term fathers, I'm meaning fathers and mothers and his and her, and you get what I'm saying. It's been both. There's not one or the other, but just most of the writings fall into the category of the men. So here you've got these guys who for centuries have been passing this on from generation to generation, this thing called spiritual direction. Then two guys got so enamored with it, John Climacus, who in the 7th century, he's actually called often John of the Ladder because this book he wrote called The Ladder of Divine Ascent. Again, written in the 7th century, I have friends in the Orthodox Church who every Lent, their church reads this book again because there's just so much about spiritual life and spiritual development in it. He also wrote a letter called To the Shepherd, and the letter basically described what spiritual direction would look like. We're going to be referring to that a lot. That's why I'm pointing these two guys out. Simeon the New Theologian was the other guy in the 10th century. He's kind of a heavyweight. There are only three guys in the history of the church who were called theologians. There was John the Apostle, who wrote John and Revelation, and you don't need much explanation about him. In the 4th century, there was Gregory Nazianzen. And then in the 10th century, Simeon was of the character of the theological understanding that he was called the new theologian. So he wrote a thing called On Confession. And basically, these guys, both of them, developed an understanding of what spiritual direction is supposed to be. I guess the best way to say it is this. The spiritual director's role is to be a spiritual guide to a pupil or a disciple, whatever term you want to use, but not just with information. More than anything, it's to be a living model and example. Actually, in the context of an all-encompassing relationship, like Shane said, it's not just one of those things where it's kind of like, well, how's your prayer life? How's your Bible reading? Do you go to small group? Well, we're good then. But it involved all aspects of life. Everything comes into what it means to develop this gift of spiritual direction. It took in everything. And I guess more than anything, a spiritual direction would be considered a spiritual physician or healer. But between Climacus and Simeon the New Theologian, they came up with 5 titles that kind of describe what a spiritual director looks like. And I think hopefully in the midst of all this, I know some of it's going to resonate with you and you're going to go, yeah, I've been there. And hopefully there will be some things that you can walk away with tonight that you're like, yeah, I can see how that's important. I could use that in my own life, even in the conversations and relationships I have on an ongoing basis. So here are the 5 words, and we're just going to kind of walk through them, and we'll see where we go. The first thing was that they were a doctor. A spiritual director is a spiritual doctor. And this was not like a judge. It was not legalistic, but it was therapeutic. It was to bring healing. And because healing was such a big part of it, humility and charity were the 2 primary characteristics. The work of spiritual direction was always to lead people to a deeper relationship with God through love and care, not through judgment and condemnation. There's I think it's 4 volume, but sometimes it's 6, depending on the translation. Anyway, there's this really, really, really huge set of books called The Lives of the Fathers. And they have all kinds of sayings and quotes and axioms and things that these desert fathers said. And one of the primary axioms of the early fathers was this. It is not possible for a man to be recalled from his purpose through harshness, because one demon does not drive out another. Rather, you will bring the lost one back through benevolence. For our God draws man to himself through counsel. So that kind of encompasses the idea of being a spiritual doctor. It's not about slapping and beating and hitting and trying to fix and yelling at and sending them back for another set of whatever the penance was supposed to be. But it was to bring people to a place of awareness of God's love and grace. There is a story that is told that a monk from another monastery had been accused of something in the monastery. We're not actually told what it was he had done. But he had fled his own monastery to go to the first spiritual father, Antony the Great. And a bunch of monks from the guy's monastery came chasing after him. And this is the quote. They came to take care of him through, and I love this word, vituperation. Yeah, everybody's like, yeah, okay. I know, me too. I was too. Harsh criticism. They were going to come to use harsh criticism to bring this man back to their monastery. So there was a guy sitting there named Abba Paphnutius. His nickname, and I'm not making this stuff up, was the Big Head. And as he watched all these monks coming to this other monk to kind of rough him up and get him back home, he said, I've got a story to tell you. There was a man who was in a stream, and he had fallen into the mud, and it was up to his knees. And some people came to give him a hand, but by the time they were done, they had plunged him up to his neck in the mud. The idea being, a lot of our quote unquote spiritual help ends up not being so helpful. You ever been in one of those situations where somebody has 27 Bible verses guaranteed to get you right, and you're not going anywhere until you've heard them all, and you feel yourself slipping further and further into the mud as it just continues on? Or I heard someone tell me one time that they had related a really difficult situation they had been in their lives to somebody from a church, and the person said to them, God must think you're really special to make you go through something so bad. If that's me, I'm going to say, thanks, God, but I'm not that special. It's okay. I don't need to be up in the mud to my neck. But a spiritual doctor is about helping people out of the mud, not taking them further and further into the mud. The second phrase is a counselor, a teacher who heals through his word. Climacus said, John Climacus made this quote in the 7th century, and he said that a lot of these fathers in the early times had gotten a little out of control on this stuff. The legalism was like off the charts. St. Anthony made this comment. As far as possible, a monk should in full trust ask the elder how many steps to take and how many drops of water to drink in his cell in case he is making some mistake in these matters. So let me go ahead and tell you right off the bat, spiritual direction is not telling you how many steps to walk or how many drops to drink. You've got those, those Fitbit things now. That takes care of that. You don't need a spiritual director telling you how many steps. Those things can be taken care of. But a counselor would be one who helps you to see all the things that are going on that should be obvious but are not. Isaac Asimov makes this quote. It's a little fuzzy if you can't read it. He says, we are often told that it is as plain as the nose on our face. But try seeing your nose without a mirror. It's very, very difficult to do. So in essence, spiritual direction means holding up the mirror and saying, you may not be seeing things from this angle. I don't have the background you have. I haven't had all the experiences you have. I don't have the same emotional triggers that you have. So I don't get affected by that nearly like you do, and I'm seeing it from a completely different perspective. We talked about this 2 or 3 weeks ago, the way the human brain works, and we all have triggers, and we all have neural pathways, and there are things that sometimes there is no logical reason why we respond the way we respond, but we do. I want to give you a few examples. Ronald Reagan Try to listen to one Republican speech without hearing Ronald Reagan referred to 4 or 5 times. He has become the ultimate trigger for the good old days. And I'm not commenting good or bad. I'm just saying, listen, in Pence's speech at the Republican convention, I counted 5 times. I didn't watch the whole speech, believe me. How about this one for you people kind of my age? A taster's choice moment. In the movie Good Will Hunting, they took advantage of the fact that that's a trigger for people. And Robin Williams and Matt Damon are on the bench in the park. And Matt Damon looks at him and says, "Are we going to have a taster's choice moment?" And it immediately triggers in your head happy thoughts of connecting and being warm and fuzzy and with the people you love, and it's all good. The one in the left corner, my son Josiah, called me this week. He's been having a lot of spiritual discussions with a couple guys that he works with this summer at his university. And one of the kids went to a Catholic high school. And this kid has so many triggers, it's unbelievable. But every time anything that has anything to do with religion is mentioned, this dude's off. And it has nothing to do with the conversation, but all these triggers have been involved in his head. And then the fourth one, it often triggers some of us because it's the unknown. We're not sure what we're dealing with here. We're not really understanding why that's got to be there, and does it affect us or does it not? And here's a question for you. Does the lady on the left trigger you more than the lady on the right? And if so, why? We all have triggers in our heads, things that we just immediately react to. And a lot of them make sense and a lot of them don't. But the spiritual advisor, as a counselor, helps us to see what things make us respond the way we do. They help us to understand what things are going on. They help us to see when our past is playing far too big a role in our present. And they also help us to understand that sometimes we may be fighting windmills here when the real conflict is over here. But this is what we've always focused on, and why would I change now? Well, because that's not really the issue if you look at it. One last thing about the spiritual counselor. There are a lot of times where the best advice he gives is silence. Oh, that it were true. Simeon the New Theologian was the disciple of Simeon the Pious. And he used to say of him that sometimes Simeon the Pious would come and spend the whole day with his group of people and never say a word. But his very being there would impact everyone's life. I've known people like that. That you just didn't really need to have them say anything. You even if you were having a good time or a bad time, you see them and everything just kind of changes. And that was kind of a final element in what it meant to be a spiritual counselor. The next thing is kind of obvious, an intercessor. A teacher who heals by prayers. It is said of the Desert Fathers that a lot of times disciples would come to them and they would have no questions whatsoever, but they would just walk up to the saint and say, "Father, pray for me." And that'd be the whole conversation. There's a guy named Irene Hoschauer who wrote a book on some of this stuff, and he tells the story about a friend of his who went to a place in Greece called Mount Athos. Now, if you don't know about Mount Athos, it's a tiny kind of peninsula, isthmus kind of thing, 14 or so miles long and wide, and there are just like tons and tons of monasteries on this island, and it's kind of been kept separate from the rest of the world. And on this island are a lot of people we would consider these kind of spiritual directors or spiritual fathers. Elder Pazios, he's one of the ones more recently who is well known for the spiritual advice he gave. But this friend of Hoschauer's went to Mount Athos, and after he had been in conversation with the spiritual director for quite a long time, he was getting ready to leave, and he said, man, he said this to the saint, it's been amazing being with you. Do you mind if I write to you for advice? And the father said, no, don't write, but I'll pray for you. Well, the guy was like, felt really rejected. He was like, man, I just wanted to write. And a monk overheard the conversation and pulled him aside and said, listen, I know you feel like you just got the shaft because he told you that he doesn't want you to write, but he doesn't tell everybody that he'll pray for them. And his advice may be good, but his prayers are much, much, much better. So be grateful you got the prayer part. And I guess something that, as I was thinking about this, the thing about a spiritual director praying for you, if you are in this relationship with them, they are praying intelligently, with understanding, knowing exactly what's going on in your life. I think all of us have probably been in the situation where something's been happening and somebody with the best will in the world will say, oh, I'm going to pray for you. And in your head, you're saying, you have no idea what's going on with me right now. And you may pray, but I don't know what you're going to be asking. But the spiritual director actually is involved as an intercessor, praying about the very specific things that they know are going on in someone's life. The next one is mediator, and this is just kind of big. This is kind of where I'm going to camp a little bit. It's one who reconciles others to God. A mediator, this is not like we sometimes think Catholic priest is the guy who stands and hears confession and he takes him to God. It's not that kind of a thing at all. The best way that I can describe it is the spiritual director represents God to the people in the same way that they represent the people to God. They're praying on their behalf, but now they turn that around and they're kind of God's representative. So a lot of the work of spiritual direction helps clarify who God is, what their picture of God really looks like. I would say, to kind of put it in our context, Shane is making comments like this all the time. We have a society today who has a really big picture of Adam and a really small picture of Jesus. And you hear that in sermons, but then to help somebody actually start working that out in their own heads is to help them begin to gain a new understanding of what God is like. So a lot of times your conversation may have to be, no, God's not mad at you. It wasn't his divine plan that you have those terrible things happen in your life. Those kind of things just happen. It's the world. It may be God isn't after you, or he can never, ever forgive that particular thing. And I have one friend that I talk with on a weekly basis, and she says that she calls our church's understanding the big God theology. She grew up in the evangelical church, and she felt like her God was just really, really small, and now she's getting this really, really big God, and it encompasses all of life, and everything kind of starts to make sense. So we're doing that. We're kind of helping people get a new understanding of what God looks like. Another thing is it's helping people understand God's work in their life. This is the way Simeon the New Theologian said it. If those who were baptized into Christ put on Christ as a garment, what is this garment that they put on? Well, it's God. Then should not he who has put on God as a garment be aware spiritually and see what he has put on? One whose body is naked feels when he puts on clothes, and he sees what his robe is like. And should not he whose soul is naked feel God's presence when he has put on God? I think there are a lot of times when people are so caught up in their lives, and so many of us have negative viewpoints of ourselves and of the things going on with us, that sometimes you need somebody to stop and say, hey, that thing there, how do you think that happened? What was going on there? That was pretty positive, right? You handled that situation really well. Would we want to say that God was at work there maybe, that he was doing, oh, I never thought about it like that. Yeah, that was probably God's presence kind of involved in the situation that you were in. And over and over and over there, and there are some times where it's got to be, hey, God's probably trying to get your attention and wanting you to kind of refocus. It goes positive and negative, but both ways we're helping people to know and understand that He is at work, that He actually is there. A lot of times when life is too fast or too noisy to actually stop and hear what He's saying. And that meant a lot of the early fathers viewed the spiritual director as the friend of the heavenly King, so that as a friend, they were able to help their disciples know and understand what the King was like. But of course, this implied that they actually knew Him personally themselves. Another thing is this, in this mediator part, shame, guilt, secrecy cause a lot of people to hide themselves away. I can't tell you how many times I've heard these words, literally heard these words. I believe God can forgive everybody else. I just don't think He can forgive me. You don't understand what I did. For everybody else, there was an excuse, but not for me. And they feel like the red person in the crowd. A spiritual director comes as a mediator and says, God offers you forgiveness. He offers you acceptance. Complete and total acceptance. You are loved. You are cherished. You are brought fully in. You're a good guy. You're a decent woman. You matter. You're part of this whole thing. Because a lot of people don't have any trouble knowing the negative about themselves. But a lot of people have a hard time understanding the love and the awesomeness of God. So I think that a spiritual father actually comes in and says, I know the King. He's got a lot of love. He really, really likes you a whole lot just as you are. And He's got good things in store for you. And He wants me to be sure you understand that. And I think that's just an awesome thing. Part of this too is, and this is really, it's funny how, man, some of these guys writing in the 6th century and we're in the 20th century and it makes sense. There is always a tendency to kind of get off into about ourselves and how this is affecting me, and it's all. And before long, you can get into a spirituality that's, hey, I'm trying to get at the mood and I want to kind of just touch the eye of God or something. Robert Weber, in his book, The Divine Embrace, said it like this. The focus on my inner life rather than the mystery of the triune God at work in history to redeem the world becomes narcissistic and even can express itself in bizarre direct encounters with God that are viewed as more important than the divine embrace of God which took place on the hard wood of the cross. I think the mediator frequently is helping people come back to the focus of, hey, this is about God. This is about the Trinity. This is about the incarnational Christ and everything He has done for you, for your life. So that was the continuous work of a spiritual director, to make sure the focus was on God, who He is, and what He's doing. And finally, this is the fifth one. The spiritual director would be a sponsor. They held very tightly to the verse in Galatians 6. Bear one another's burdens and so fulfill the law of Christ. So I think all of us know that in spiritual terms especially, a lot of times it's a lot easier to walk through situations when you know somebody else is walking with you. They may not be doing anything magically or wonderfully or saying all the most profound things ever known to man, but they're helping you carry the burden. Or they're helping you rejoice in the good times. When things are working well, you know if you call that person, they're going to be excited about what just happened, instead of immediately turning the conversation into what happened in their world that day. But there is an actual learning to carry the load together. Because of this, there were two words that kind of summed up what this looked like. One is apatheia and one is sympatheia. We tend to go apathy with not really caring a whole lot, but it was more in the Greek, a sense of being dispassionate. In other words, it means something like this. Somebody who is not overcome with emotion, hasty reaction, or uncontrolled thoughts and words. If you're having a really bad situation and you're trying to tell somebody and you break down in tears and you're just kind of pouring it all out, the last thing you want at that moment is for that person to be so emotionally overwhelmed that they break down into tears, turn into a total blubbering wreck, and don't hear a word you're saying. So in a sense, there needs to be almost a little dispassion, not a sense of uncaring, but I can handle this. I'm okay. I'm not going to be overwhelmed by my feelings in the moment. And of course, sympathy doesn't need a whole lot of explanation. Feeling empathy, recognizing the weight of the burdens that someone is carrying, showing patience for the long journey that somebody may be on to spiritual wholeness. A lot of times, it's not overly helpful to have someone hear where you are in your life and for them to say, yeah, I had something like that too. I got over it. You'll be fine. That usually doesn't quite do what you're needing in that moment. There is a sense of feeling where someone is at that point in their life and realizing that there are probably 12 billion other factors that you don't even know about that have brought them to that place in their lives. So the spiritual director was apathetic in terms of not being overwhelmed by all kinds of reactions and sympathetic at the same time as recognizing it. So really, overall, the spiritual father or mother was one who was constantly working to lead a person to God and into the fullness of God. This kind of shifts gears to the west for just a second, but this guy, although we don't know his name, was kind of the most east-west guys, if that makes sense, that we have in church history. The guy who was the author of The Cloud of Unknowing, I think he kind of encapsulates what it means for someone who is involved in a spiritual direction relationship. It is not what you are or what you have been that God sees with his all-merciful eyes, but what you want to be. And I think the spiritual director continually keeps a person, I think that's what they were to do, was to continually keep a person pressing into what they wanted to be. Just kind of holding up the mirror at the right time, not asking how many steps they took, but how many things are going on in your life that are taking you further into this spiritual life and development. Real quickly, I want to talk just about, they also had then some steps that were the response of someone who was a pupil or disciple, whatever word you want to use. The person that was in relationship with the spiritual father, and I'm just going to hit these quickly. The first one is this: be careful in choosing a spiritual director. Not everybody is cut out for this. In the early centuries, the sort of hallmark of spiritual greatness was how bad you could look. Did you look emaciated? Did you look pale? Did you look as if you hadn't eaten in 6 weeks? Were you downcast? Was your hair oily? All the right stuff to prove that you really didn't take care of yourself and were wholly devoted to God. But Basil the Great used to tell them, I'm very pale, but I wouldn't recommend myself as a spiritual father. It's just not enough to go on. And other things come along. There can be, we can get caught up with, well, hey, they seem to know all the right big words, and they've read so many books, and every time I hear them, they're talking to me about another book, and it can be, wow, maybe that's what a spiritual director should be. Or they're overly religious. They know every Bible verse and every phrase that's supposed to be used at every moment for every situation, and they never miss a beat, and it's all really good. Or they sort of live in this spiritually spectacular world where things go on and you're just kind of like, wow, that's never happened to me. No angels have ever opened my garage door for me. Maybe this is who I should be under. There was a guy in the early 20th century in Russia called Grigory Rasputin. There are all kinds of songs about this guy. There are all kinds of thoughts about this guy. But the truth is, in the last 200 years, he is probably the biggest spiritual fraud to ever walk on the planet. And if you ever, not that you would want to, read a history of the czars of Russia, you can read and find out that this guy basically brought down Russia in the form it was in and opened the way for the Bolshevik Revolution. And I won't go into details and stuff, but he gave so much bad spiritual advice, it's unbelievable what ended up happening. And the result truly was communism for the next 70 years. So if you see him especially, don't go with it. Another thing is, show an openness of heart. This is kind of a biggie. One of the main things the early fathers taught was that you should be willing to share your thoughts with a spiritual director, to be honest about what was going on in you and not what you thought should be going on in you. And I think this is probably one of the biggest things for the American church, because we have put such a premium on performance and outward appearance that if we all kind of said what was really going on with us, oh man, what a downer situation. Sometimes you're just having a bad day, but you're not supposed to say that because we're all victorious in Christ and we're more than conquerors and all the verses. But sometimes you just need to say, I'm struggling and I don't see this going well right now. I think I need some help. There was a guy named St. Theodore the Studite, and he made this comment. And hey, I didn't go there. I knew someone would. An evil thought is the beginning, the root of the errors we make. If one discloses it, it disappears with God's help. If it remains hidden, it gradually evolves into a work of darkness. And from that comes death, splits between brothers, and so forth. There was a place of honesty, but it was a place of safe honesty. That's why step one is so important before heading for step two. You make sure you're very careful about who you're going to share this stuff with. The third thing was this: act with faith and submission. Another guy who was kind of a really big hitter in the 6th century in Gaza was a guy named Dorotheus. And he had this to say: it is said in Proverbs, those who have no direction fall like leaves. Safety lies in many advisors, not in many advisors, as if one had to consult the first person to come along. But one must tell everything to the person one trusts and ask advice on everything. Without this, the devil has an easy turn, deceiving by means of virtue itself. His trump card is one man's will. That is why Abba Poyman says that one's own will is a brass wall between man and God. This is something that we in the 21st century West really, really don't like. Since the French Revolution and the American Revolution, freedom and individuality have become like everything for us. And so to say, I'm going to be involved in a relationship with you, and I'm actually sometimes going to trust you and even submit to you when I don't see it, we just don't do that. That's not the American way. But there is a place for having a relationship with someone who maybe has a little more spiritual experience, a little objectivity, a little spiritual understanding, who can say, I'm not telling you what to do, I'm just asking you to wait a little while. See how this plays out. Give it some time. Let's wait and see if this is going to be the best option. And there are times where we have to come with an attitude of faith and submission to that relationship if we're going to be involved in something like this. And the last one is this: do everything out of love. The early fathers wanted you to be sure that obedience was not the primary objective of a spiritual relationship. The primary objective was love. Two people walking together, mutual love, mutual submission, primarily love for God. The spiritual director and the disciple grow together in this attitude of love for one another. So this was passed on from generation to generation, from one individual to the other, whether it was in Israel or in the Middle East, or if it was in Europe, or if it was up in Russia. This has gone on for centuries. Call it the golden chain if you want. But all this is two people who make an agreement, we're going to walk this stuff out. I want to finish by, again, going back to Dorotheus of Gaza. This is from a book of his that is still published today. And I think this really says everything that is kind of like the ultimate goal of spiritual direction in this kind of relationship. Let us return to his likeness, that likeness he has patterned after his own. Let us honor our worth. Let us try to understand something of the great good by which we have been honored. Let us try to understand something of the likeness to which we were created. Let us not despise the great gifts he has given us for no other reason than his goodness, not for any worth of ours. Let us be convinced that we are made in the image of God who made us. Let us honor our exemplar. That, to me, is the basis of a spiritual direction relationship, is moving into the fullness of what it means to be conformed to the image of Jesus Christ. And like Shane said, none of us were meant to do this alone. This is something that has gone on in the church for centuries, and something that here in the West, I think we definitely could use more of as we all begin to understand what it means to walk this life together. There you go.